This is Morning Edition on Vermont Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Mitch Wertlieb. If you're a longtime fan of the jam band Extraordinaire Fish, or if you just want to learn more about why and how this quartet that started from humble beginnings at the University of Vermont developed a cult following of devotees not seen since the heyday of the Grateful Dead, have we got a book for you. Weighing in at a whopping 800-plus pages, The Fish Companion, a guide to the band and their music, has just been published in its third edition and is the definitive tome for everything Fish, that is Fish with a PH, of course. John Demeter is a member of the board of directors for the Mockingbird Foundation. We'll find out about that more in a moment. He is also a contributing editor for The Fish Companion, third edition. Thank you so much for joining us in our VPR studios today.
Thanks very much, Mitch. I'm really excited to be here to talk about The Fish Companion and the Mockingbird Foundation.
This book is just amazing. It does contain biographies of the band members, kind of a soup-to-nuts origin story and guide for the band's evolution. And it's got a comprehensive list of every concert the band ever played, along with each song from those shows. How was this mammoth undertaking put together?
Going back to the late 80s and early 90s, there were grassroots efforts from fans to categorize and list all the songs before the World Wide Web even existed. Those efforts evolved over time and were eventually put into a comprehensive database, a usable database, to this day continually being refined into something that we could use and develop and evolve and add to as Fish continues to play new music and new shows.
And this book was really an all-volunteer effort. Folks who were just fans of the band got together and brought their knowledge, their expertise. That's very much like the Mockingbird Foundation as well. That's an all-volunteer effort, too.
Absolutely. The Mockingbird Foundation was created by fans of the band in 1996 and incorporated in 97 as a 501c3. And the foundation's dual missions are, one, to document intellectual property about Fish, the history, show reviews, takes on different songs, etc., and to raise funds through various sources, mostly fan donations, but sometimes creating intellectual property or art and selling it, and then donating those proceeds to further music education for children, mostly in underserved areas.
One of the things that I think is so remarkable about this companion book is that if you are not as intense a fan of Fish, someone like me, I love the band, but I've only seen them twice live, and one was the Irene benefit that they did. The other, I remembered going to the Worcester Centrum. I couldn't remember exactly the year, but I remembered hearing the band play a version of the Rolling Stones' Loving Cup, and I thought it was awesome, you know? So I went back through this guide, and lo and behold, by process of elimination, I found the exact show I was at, November 28th, 1998. It brought back some great memories. Why do Fish heads, much like Deadheads before them, love to chronicle these various shows with such great detail?
Well, there's a couple reasons to that, and we discussed that ad nauseum on our Fish forums and as groups of friends around a campfire over a beer or whatever. But one, I think the nature of the music that the band plays is very analytical. There might be, for people who aren't fans, the perception of a kind of noodly on and on, but these guys are very polished, intelligent musicians with backgrounds in a lot of different styles. And to really get sucked into this world, you have to embrace and like that. So you want to be into not just rock and roll, but jazz and bluegrass and embrace these odd-sounding changes and progressions. Then the main thing is the improvisational nature of what the band does. We say every show is different, and it's true. The magic we're all looking for comes in the improvisational art, where they're up there live without a net and can create something that you have never heard before, might never hear again, and you could share it in the moment with the band and everyone around you. It's quite magical, and you're right, it is a legacy of, I think, what people would follow the Grateful Dead around for, just creating these moments in time and space that were not going to be repeated.
And a song like Bathtub Gin will not be played the same way twice. It might be half an hour long in one show and maybe, you know, 10 minutes long in another.
Right, exactly. And that's a great point. And the distinction yet similarities between the Grateful Dead and Fish scene and culture versus their music. So if you think the Grateful Dead came up in the late 60s in Northern California, and those guys were listening to country and bluegrass and roots and folk and Americana, and that's reflected in the music they created. Whereas Fish is, half a generation younger, maybe, listening to classic rock rock and progressive rock, and that's what they came up listening to. So that's reflected in their sound. It sounds different, but it draws the same type of analysis in people and chasing that creative peak in art.
This book is notable, too, I really respected this, for not shying away from criticism. There's the chronicle of the band hitting kind of a low point right around the time of the farewell concerts, as they were known then, in Coventry in 2004 here in Vermont. It turned out not to be the band's final shows. They did regroup, and they're still playing now. What went wrong at Coventry, even though notes in the book on those shows say that certain songs at that show were performed extremely well?
Well, the whole timeline of Phish, I think, kind of leads into that. As they grew and grew from, you know, college shows to small theaters to amphitheaters, and then with the passing of Jerry Garcia and Grateful Dead ending, that took a whole cultural weight of a new influx of fans. And I think the band put tremendous pressure on themselves to satisfy their fans, but also keep building the organization, the employees around them. And certainly, I think it's documented, I don't like to talk about it much, but, you know, drugs and substances became a part of that as well. And Coventry had a couple challenges, and one was that was the summer of 2004, which we were just super saturated with rain. And that created tremendous logistical problems that literally traumatized fans. There were people, you might remember, there were people parked on I-91 and carried their stuff 10, 15 miles to get to this concert. Also, the part of went wrong is you think this is what these guys have been doing their whole adult lives, and it was coming to an end. So just the emotions of that had to be so incredibly powerful to think about trying to perform on stage for 60 or 80,000 people while dealing with that couldn't have been easy. But despite that, it was a show of such highs and lows. There were certain songs that just literally weren't performed, like the band broke down mid-song. But certain versions, as you read in the book, can be ranked among the best ever of what they've played in that 1,700-show career.
Another thing that's different about this third edition is that you have included some incredible photographs in this book, big, splashy, full-color pictures of thousands of balloons being dropped in Madison Square Garden, and there's a truck that's completely ensconced in mud at one of the shows, things like that. Yeah, that's different with this edition.
Yeah, and that was the Coventry mud, the iconic image there. But yeah, the photography is wonderful, and we're pretty confident at this point that this is the best compendium of published photography about Phish, and we are very thankful to the band and its organization for giving us rights to use these photographs. The photographers as well, when they heard that this was an all-volunteer effort and that all proceeds are going to benefit music education for children, they were just thrilled to get on board, and we think the results speak for themselves.
What do you think the ceiling is for Phish? Do you think they're going to be playing for years to come?
I honestly do at this point, because when they broke up, you know, they had personally and professionally hit sort of a low point or just burnt out. When they came back in 2009, there was a conscious effort on their part that they wanted to balance the efforts of Phish with their other interests in life. That's the page that they're on, because that's sort of what they've said explicitly in interviews. You know, we're built to last this time. We're not going to burn ourselves out.
John Demeter is a member of the board of directors for the Mockingbird Foundation and is a contributing editor to the Phish Companion 3rd Edition. Thank you so much for speaking with us, John.
Thanks, Mitch.
And we'll have links to the Mockingbird Foundation and information on a great event that's coming up at Nectar's October 15th on our website, vpr.net.